from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report for May 14, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Obama administration is promising a complete review of U.S. food safety policies. I'll have these and other stories this half hour. Also, Todd Gleason will push the pencil on whether it makes financial sense to switch from corn to soybeans. And don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with John Davis of Chesapeake Energy to discuss Corn Belt agricultural weather forecasts. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Let's check how prices settled on this Thursday afternoon in Chicago and Kansas City. In Kansas City, July wheat settled at 6.43¾, up 5¾. September, 6.53¾, up 5¾. May wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade settled at 5.81½, up 2¾. July, 5.93¼, up 4½. September, 6.19¾, up 4½. May corn settled at 4.21½, up 2. July, 4.28¼, up 1¾. September, 4.37½, up 2. December, 4.49¼, up 2. March of 2010, 4.60¼, up 2½. June crude at 58.62 is up 60. May beans, 11.66 to settlement, up 16. July, 11.47½, up 19½. August, 10.98½, up 13½. September, 10.40½, up 13½. November, 9.92, and that's up 10½. January of 2010, 9.95½, up 8½. May soybean meal, 3.81.50, up $3. July soybean meal, 3.62.30, up 9.80. May soybean oil, 38.60, down 30. July, 38.84, down 32. June live hogs, June live cattle, rather, 82.80, up 30. August, 82.85, up 2½. May feeders, 99.25, up 30. And those are today's settlements in Chicago and Kansas City.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. www.myrmconline.com.
Looking at the two-state forecast for Friday in southern and western Illinois, cloudy with scattered showers early, then showers and thunderstorms likely during the afternoon. In northern and eastern Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy. Elsewhere, becoming mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms developing. Some strong to severe storms are possible during the afternoon. Highs ranging from 64 near Lake Michigan to 82 in far southern Illinois. Extended highlights, another round of moderate to locally heavy rain is likely Friday afternoon in northern and western Illinois before shifting to the south on Friday night and Saturday. A few lingering showers may remain along the Ohio River on Sunday morning before high pressure settles over the region, bringing dry weather for much of next week. A storm system in the southeastern states will stream moisture into southern Indiana late next week and bring renewed chances for rain. Temperatures will trend slightly below average through the middle of next week before warming to above average for the second half of the week.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Your You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Dave.
What did you think of the price action today? New highs again in soybeans?
Everything is still generally positive on the technical front. Of course, soybeans continue to be the primary driving force here, with strong export demand from China and dwindling old crop inventory supplies. And, you know, many people still feel that even though USDA did lower old crop carryout down to 130 here on earlier this week, kind of feel that that number is probably still 15 or 20 million too high, at least the way demand continues to come at us.
We're keeping an eye on the weather. We're in a weather market. We're likely to have some wetness over the weekend in the eastern Corn Belt. What is the trade thinking? Are they of a mindset maybe to spread soybeans against corn at some point here down the road?
Well, I'm not on that side of the equation. When you get into Chicago, I'm not necessarily sure what a lot of your speculative traders are thinking. But I do think, you know, especially for us here sitting in the eastern Corn Belt with not a lot of corn planted, and, of course, we do have some rains coming through here. At least my weather guy tells me we got some rains coming through here, maybe Friday, Saturday. That could be heavy. We'll have to see if we miss those or if they come in on the light side. I think then that may, you know, would give the at least a shot at a little drier weather pattern that farmers could get back in the fields here and maybe get some corn planted here sometime next week. Now, if these rains are heavy and widespread, that's definitely going to push back any corn planting dates here in the eastern Corn Belt. And that might, you know, begin to tip the scales of the trade, kind of thinking that we're going to increase soybean acres and decrease corn acres. But, you know, I think, you know, like I mentioned before, if there is a magic date, it's kind of this May 20th, May 21st is when everybody really bites their fingernails. And I think probably these weekend rains probably have a lot to say with that.
So everybody is on the edge of their seats, traders trying to figure out what the next move is and how to position themselves. If traders are positioning themselves potentially to the downside in soybeans, what are they looking at?
Well, if they're going to position themselves on the downside, I think in this type of market they would probably be using some kind of put strategy of some kind, because the overall chart pattern still looks very strong. July soybeans did post a close outside of its $2 sideways to higher trading range that basically began back in early December. We've met some upside price targets, but just glancing at the chart, you could probably begin to talk 1, 2, 3, 4. Probably you could, some of the technicians are probably going to start talking about 12 something maybe in these soybeans. Probably looking at, if you look at a monthly chart, a 50% retracement on the monthly continuation soybean chart is 12.19. The chart pattern, at least looking at July soybean futures, shows that is in striking distance. We'll have to kind of see, you know, how that plays out. I would say that if we miss the rains this weekend or they're not very light and all of a sudden the corn planters begin to start rolling, that might be enough to maybe push these beans on up into that 50% retracement level.
Yeah, and congestion on the July daily charts around the 12 and a quarter or thereabouts. There's a good little congestion area, so that all seems to fit together. What about corn?
Corn is having a hard time. I mean, when you take a look at what we know here, at least in the Eastern Corn Belt, we begin to worry about how many acres we're losing, what kind of yield potential we're losing. But we do know that the Western Corn Belt is in good shape. They're going to have a good crop out there. At least they're off to a good start. Corn, I think, is we have broken out of that triangle formation. Short-term target here is in July corn is maybe this 442 area. I think if we attain that, then all of a sudden I think the gates then are open for something up around the 480 level. That seems to be the next target, especially if you look at your monthly chart. You look at a monthly continuation corn chart, a 38% retracement of the big decline that we had last summer or last fall is right around this 472. There's maybe a swing objective off of the December low that could maybe read something like 476. So there seems to be a cluster of upside objectives here between this 472, 475, 480 level if this July corn does start plowing through this 440 area.
Now, we don't like the idea that both corn and soybeans are going to move in the same direction short term, right? One's going to go one way and the other's going to go the other way. That's what the trade is thinking?
I don't know if the trade is thinking that. I mean, it's you got to keep in mind that beans are being driven by demand right at the moment, old crop demand, supply tightness. So while we are in a weather market somewhat, the demand for old crop beans may not be as much impacted by a shift in the weather pattern as maybe corn would be. Corn is definitely in a weather pattern, and I think dry weather forecasts that would allow planters to get rolling in a fairly timely manner would probably put some downward pressure on corn, but I don't necessarily think it's going to roll over and totally die, at least not till we get a little further down the road, I think, in overall crop prospects.
Where do you like corn sticking then on the downside?
I think it needs to hold above the triangle formation. We broke above the breakout point here on July corn is about 4.25. I think on any kind of decline, it kind of needs to hold above that. And that would not be uncommon from a technical move is to go back to the point of breakout and then find support and then resume in the direction of the breakout, which would then tee up the next leg to the upside. I think on new crop corn, that number, well, new crop corn is about 4.25. On July, that number is going to be a little closer to about 405, 407.
Let's turn our attention to the U.S. dollar, which you says is sort of the hinge pin of it all. What are you seeing there?
The thing is terribly oversold, and I think that is why we had a little rally yesterday, and we're trying to, the last 3 days, we've tried to kind of turn the thing sideways here between 82 and 83. We might do a little bit more of that to work off an oversold condition, but the way that I read the chart, I'm kind of looking for the dollar to go down into that 80-cent level or 80-index level, could even slip below that. Once you get down that far, then you're within striking distance here of this 77.68, which was the early December low. So it looks to me like we're still vulnerable. The dollar kind of works a 12 to 13-week cycle. From low to low, and we are only in week 8. So if that 12 to 13-week cycle low is in play, then that dollar could stay weak, working itself into somewhat of a mid-June low.
And very quickly, what would that mean for the grains then?
Oh, I think dollar weakness is supportive to the grain complex. I think export demand, the way you kind of look down the road here, corn export demand is going to pick up, I think, for the coming year. Bean demand looks like it's going to stay strong. So I do think all of a sudden maybe we're going to be back into an export-driven type market, something that we really haven't experienced really since the 70s.
Thank you, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He is in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, Obama administration officials promised a complete review of U.S. food safety policies with an eye toward making profound changes in the way the government tries to prevent and respond to foodborne illnesses. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says, quote, "When we witness an outbreak, we realize it makes all of us worry about whether the dinner that we're eating or the lunch that's in our child's lunchbox will do harm." Vilsack told non-government food safety advocates and industry representatives in a meeting that improvements to U.S. food safety policies need to be made, and he asked for feedback. The Wednesday meeting was the first listening session hosted by the White House Food Safety Working Group. The U.S. and European Union signed a deal yesterday for a temporary reprieve in the long-running argument over hormone-treated beef. The U.S. agreed to drop plans to impose retaliatory duties against the EU's ban on beef fed with hormones in return for increased duty-free access for hormone-free beef from the U.S. Under the deal, the EU will boost duty-free access for hormone-free U.S. beef by 20,000 metric tons for each of the next 3 years, on top of the existing duty-free quota of 11,500 tons for U.S. beef. That will increase to 45,000 tons in the fourth year. U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk is in Geneva this week, where he is meeting with World Trade Organization Director General Pascal Lamy and ambassadors from a number of WTO member countries. A main purpose of the trip is to give Kirk the opportunity to sound them out regarding the stalled Doha round of talks. Speaking with reporters, Kirk said the Obama administration would prefer to restart the multilateral talks more or less where they stopped last July rather than going back to square one. Discussions on a free trade agreement between the U.S. and Panama have continued through the week. House Ways and Means Trade Subcommittee Chairman Sandy Levin has scheduled a hearing today to determine if investment protections contained in free trade agreements ensure that foreign investments of U.S. citizens are safe. Problems with investments in Panama and the country's reputation as a tax haven have been sticking points in gaining congressional approval for the U.S.-Panama FTA. The Labor Department today says U.S. producer prices rose faster than expected in April, driven by a surge in food costs. The producer price index climbed 0.3% after declining 1.2% in March. Food prices rose 1.5% in April, the biggest increase since January of 2008. Food costs rose on a record jump in egg prices, along with soaring prices for vegetables and meat. Analysts had forecast a 0.1% rise in the overall index. Core producer prices, excluding food and energy costs, rose 0.1% in April. U.S. regulators unveiled a plan yesterday outlining a new regulatory framework that would force some over-the-counter derivatives to be traded on exchanges and subject some contracts to speculative position limits. The plan aims to shed more light on off-exchange trades, which are currently subject to very little federal regulation. Under the plan, federal commodities regulators would be given the authority to set speculative positions position limits on both exchange-traded and over-the-counter contracts if those contracts have a significant impact on market prices. Compared with a month ago, the average retail price of anhydrous has spiked 8% and now averages about $647.50 a ton. The other seven major fertilizers were down in price from a month ago. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The late planting season in the Eastern Corn Belt has some farmers wondering if it might not be worth switching to soybeans. University of Illinois agronomist Emerson Nafsinger took up that subject in the May 7th edition of the Bulletin. Todd Gleason has more.
You may read the whole article titled Planting Delays Considering the Switch from Corn to Soybeans online at www.ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin or just search Google for University of Illinois and Bulletin. Nafsinger's musings in the articles are based on $4 corn and $11 soybeans. By May 10th, he writes, gross income from corn is being lost in Illinois at the rate of $4.93 per acre for each day of delay, while soybeans is losing only $1.80, that's in northern Illinois, and 16 cents in southern Illinois. That $4.93 is good across the entire state. Now, those dollars ramp up by May 30th to $9.15 per day of planting delay for corn and a soybean loss of $4.78 and $3.92 in northern and southern Illinois, respectively. As expected, the loss in gross income as soybean planting is delayed stays well behind that of corn throughout May, and this difference widens in June. So, Nafsinger writes, if we start out by expecting a similar net income from corn and soybeans planted on time, it would make sense to plant soybeans instead of corn, even if planting is delayed only to early May. That's not a decision most farmers will make for a whole series of reasons. While planting delays mean faster losses of yield and gross income from corn compared to soybean, the date at which planting soybean will be more profitable than planting corn depends on expected net incomes from the two crops. Based on University of Illinois data, the gross income for corn planted on time is about $370 per acre higher than the gross income from planting soybean on time in the northern part of Illinois. And this difference shrinks to about $240 per acre by the end of May in northern Illinois. So, in the northern part of the state, probably the northern two-thirds, it pays to stay with corn through the end of May. Both actual and expected corn yields are lower in southern Illinois, and corn planted on time would be expected to produce a gross income of only about $80 higher than that for soybean planted on time in southern Illinois. By the middle of May, both crops would be expected to gross about the same amount per acre. So we'd expect soybean to produce a higher net per acre than corn if the soybean cost less to produce. With both crops planted at the end of May, the gross from soybeans would exceed that from corn by about $70 per acre. As a caution, writes Nafsinger, while these estimates are based on the best data available, it's likely that actual planting date responses and yield levels in 2009 will be different than the average over several years that make up the data. As the weight loss ad says, he says, individual results will vary. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's National Buttermilk Biscuit Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1686, Gabriel Fahrenheit was born. Fahrenheit was a German physicist who invented the Fahrenheit temperature scale thermometer. It was the first thermometer to use mercury instead of alcohol, which also extended the temperature range of thermometers. In 1853, Gail Borden applied for a patent for condensed milk. But it was not until the Civil War, when troops needed milk products that did not spoil, that condensed milk became popular. In 1919, Henry John Heinsteig, Heinz was founder of the H.J. Heinz Company and creator of its slogan, 57 Varieties. Heinz was inspired by an advertisement he saw while riding on an elevated train in New York City of a shoe store boasting 21 styles. Heinz picked 57, more or less, at random. In 1985, the first McDonald's restaurant in Des Plaines, Illinois, became the first fast food museum. And in 1994, the FDA announced that the Flavor Saver tomato, a biotech-developed food, was safe. It was the first time that a commercially grown, genetically engineered food was deemed safe for human consumption. But the Flavor Saver did not prove profitable due to the need for specialized harvest equipment and shipping crates. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
This is Dave Dickey. You're listening to Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. Joining us now is meteorologist John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, John.
Hey, Dave. How are you doing?
I am doing fairly well. Thank you, sir. Let me bottom line this for you. The Eastern Corn Belt corn producer needs a planting window. How soon?
They do. Well, you look at the rainfall totals over the past 24 to 36 hours, and I don't need to tell, you know, anyone this that's probably listening that they were just very impressive with that wave of low pressure and front that came through yesterday with totals of 4 to 6 inches in some of the counties in and around Springfield and now also near Bloomington, Indiana. Just phenomenal rainfall. Another wave of low pressure moves through the Great Lakes tomorrow and Saturday that brings another pretty heavy rainfall, not as heavy as what we saw, but 1 inch up to 2 inches isolated across a good portion of Illinois and Indiana. Thereafter, we do catch a little bit of a break. The pattern does go drier through the early portions of next week. However, temperatures are going to be much below normal, so evaporation rates to get some of this soil moisture back up into the atmosphere will not really prevail. And then you get in the middle and back portion next week, the main weather feature across the lower 48 is going to be a ridge of high pressure across the western U.S., the Rockies. That promotes an environment where you can have disturbances running over the top of this ridge called MCSs, or mesoscale convective systems, and it looks like those will start to move into Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio in the middle to back portion next week. These fire up overnight, they reach their peak intensity by dawn, and they start to peter out during the course of the day. Rather common phenomenon during the summer months. We're starting to get into that type of pattern. So looks like we catch a couple days here, Dave, and then after that you get into this MCS-type environment where you could have a almost nightly chance of rain showers in the back portion of next week.
Sounds to me like May 21st might be a likely day to get into the fields.
Well, May 21st is next Thursday, and that's when we start to enter an environment that's much more favorable for these nightly development of thunderstorm clusters. So you do catch a couple dry days here, but you need those couple dry days just to start drying down the excessive moisture in the soil. So if the thunderstorms pan out for later next week, just when you could start to get back in, then you get these development of thunderstorms again. So it's not an ideal pattern. We're not in a pattern that will feature ridging and large-scale warmth across the belt, eastern belt in particular, the next 10 days.
20 seconds, what else are you looking on?
Well, you look at the problems in the northern plains for spring wheat, and the Canadian prairies, too, are in very poor shape. And they just cold temperatures and unsettled weather is going to cause problems up there through early June.
Thank you very much, John.
Thanks, Dave.
John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, and that's today's closing market report. Please remember you can hear today's futures analysis and weather on the web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.
agricultural